are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. And you can find links to all the work that I've been putting out this week here at the NFL Combine. And once again, as I record this, I'm coming to you live from Indianapolis. And we have just completed the Friday installment of the Combine, a day where the quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, and kicking specialists all met the media. But before we get to that, a lot of news came down today. I just want to get you caught up. And also, I just want to let you know on this program, I'm going to have an interview with Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan. Emory and I actually sat down face-to-face today earlier in the media center, and we were talking a little bit about the news that came out today, which I'll get to in a moment. We were talking about quarterbacks and all that great stuff, so I hope you'll enjoy it. I know Emory is a favorite of a lot of you, so I was able to grab him for a few minutes. And then coming up on tomorrow's show, I'm going to have an interview with Rick Serratella, who is with NFL Draft Scout and NFL Draft Bible. And we had a conversation, again, about the quarterbacks in the draft class, just kicking around some ideas what the Giants might do. And Rick had some really good information. So that will be coming up on tomorrow's show. And I hope you enjoy it. All right, let's get right into the busy day that was. And let's start off with the announcement of the official NFL salary cap. It has now been set at $188.2 million. That is now official. It's a little below the projected estimate that Over the Cap had. I think Over the Cap had it at $190 million. But also remember, the Giants are carrying over roughly $6 million from last year. So with that, they're going to be up somewhere around I think $194.2 million, give or take a few hundred thousand. So with that, we also have the franchise tag number for the safety position. That's going to be $11.15 million. And, on that note, let's kind of just parlay into one of the pieces of news. And that is, sources today spoke to the beat writers, and apparently, Landon Collins, if he gets the franchise tag, which he may or may not, we still don't know what Dave Gettleman is planning to do, but it looks like if Landon Collins gets tagged, he is going to hold out. And we're talking a lengthy holdout, a holdout that would basically take him through the OTAs, through summer training camp, through preseason, and then have him showing up and, just before the season to sign the tag. Apparently, the source of Landon's frustration is that the Giants have yet to talk to him or his representatives about a new deal. Landon would like a new deal. And, quite frankly, I got to tell you, folks, I mean, I don't like to be overly critical if I don't have to, but I really don't understand what Dave Gettleman is doing here. I get the thing about the money, but I also know that there are ways to create money. And I just don't get it. If you're jerking around a multi-Pro Bowler like Landon Collins, what kind of message are you sending to your potential free agents, like a Sterling Shepard or, down the line, when Saquon Barkley's contract comes up? I get it. It's a business, but there has to be more to this than that. You can't just say, oh, maybe we will, maybe we won't. We're still evaluating. If there's no communication, I just don't understand, what the hesitation is. Just come right out and say, hey, look, we're waiting to find out what the cap is. We're waiting to find out, if we can clear some money. Just be patient with us. I don't know if the Giants had those conversations with Landon and his representatives or felt that they have to, but from what I can gather, that's part of the frustration, that the communication between the two sides has just not been there. And if that is indeed the case, then I think that's just not a good way of doing business. So hopefully the two sides will be able to patch up and come to a long-term agreement. But we'll find out on March 5th if the Giants are going to tag Landon Collins. I still say the way to do this is to give the the transition tag. It will allow Landon to go and shop his services. It will allow the Giants to match the offer without, you know, necessarily tying up the money. They can always take the tag off of him if need be and get the compensatory pick in 2020. But we'll see, of course, if the Giants go that route. You know, they got to come to a conclusion on that, because it just seems like both sides are, you know, kind of messing with the other, and it's just not a good way to do business, in my opinion. All right, the other piece of news to come out, this is not a surprise, is that Olivier Vernon is on the trade block. That, according to a report by Mike Garofolo and Rap Sheet, Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network. Not a surprise here. I've been saying that when the Giants look to clear money, that would be one of the contracts that they would probably look to get off their books. Now, here's the thing with Olivier Vernon's contract. While I agree that the $19.5 million that he has for 2019 is a little too steep, I'm just kind of surprised, because I would have thought try to lower that number, because now what's going to happen is if they move him, yes, they will recoup some of that money, but they'll probably have to spend some of that money to get a replacement, a cheaper replacement. And as I saw, you know, Olivier Vernon, he's only 28 years old. He's had at least 6 sacks the last 3 seasons. The only edge rusher, I believe, who's had that, you know, in the NFC, I want to say in the last, you know, several seasons, actually it's more than the last 3 seasons. It's going beyond that. You know, he's had the 6 sacks in each of, let me just double check, since 2013. Okay. I know that doesn't sound like a lot of sacks to you guys, but that's pretty consistent production. And it's just, you know, it's really a shame that they couldn't work something out there, get him to maybe lower that number a little bit and, you know, build some incentives in there. But clearly it just sounds like the Giants are looking to move on from Olivier Vernon, who, you know, was also, by the way, a pretty good run stuffer when he's healthy. But I guess, you know, the when he's healthy part is what turned the Giants off. I've always said injuries are not the player's fault, but, you know, if you're not getting the return on investment, I guess, you know, that's why the Giants are looking to move on from him. I don't necessarily agree with that, but, you know, they've got to find the money someplace, and that apparently is where they're going to try and find it. And I've been asked this on Twitter. Some people have asked me, what do I think the Giants will get for Olivier Vernon if they can move him? I got to believe they're looking for at least the 3rd-round pick. I keep saying this. Dave Gettleman wants desperately to get into that 3rd round. There's a lot of good players who are going to fall down to that 3rd round. And also, I believe that could affect how they draft, because right now, you know, the top needs are obviously offensive line, pass rusher. You can probably, you know, free safety is going to be a need. Quarterback is going to be a need. And I just wonder if they can get into that 3rd round, will that maybe allow them to do, you know, to cover at least 3 of those needs? And, you know, I'm thinking maybe quarterback, offensive tackle, and defensive pass rusher, not necessarily in that order, but in some order. So it'll be interesting to see if the Giants can get into that 3rd round, if they can even move Vernon. But I would say this, if there are no takers for Vernon, which is very possible, I have a feeling that he will be released. Probably would be in his best interest if he's released, because now he can go negotiate a brand new contract. It won't be, you know, he won't probably won't get $19 million a year like he, you know, would have gotten with this contract. But he can go out, probably go with a new team who will give him some guaranteed money and give him a fresh start and an opportunity to, you know, to show that he's still a halfway decent pass rusher. All right. Meanwhile, getting back to the combine, like I said, the quarterbacks, tight ends, receivers, kicking specialists all met with the media today. I have a list of names as well as a few offensive linemen who I think I missed yesterday. I'll just run down the list of players who said that they have met with the Giants either formally or informally. So amongst the quarterbacks, we have Dwayne Haskins, who, by the way, was a media star today. I mean, he was really, really impressive on the podium. Really liked what I heard from him. Daniel Jones, who I made the comment on Twitter that Daniel Jones in his mannerisms and even in the way he spoke kind of reminded me a lot of Eli Manning. It was just so funny to see it. I was like, I thought he could be his younger brother or something like that when I saw him. Tyree Jackson is another quarterback who said he's met with the Giants. Some tight ends that include Josh Oliver from San Jose State. He met with the Giants. Foster Moreau from LSU. Dax Raymond and from Utah. Irv Smith from Alabama. All met with the Giants. And that's interesting because I keep wondering if the Giants are going to move Rhett Ellison off this roster. Another guy, when you think of, you know, needing to lop off some high cap numbers, Ellison, I think, is still very much a contract to keep an eye on. Trace McSorley, the quarterback from Penn State University, met with the Giants. Amongst the receivers, we had Javon Durant from Florida Athletic. Wake Forest's Gray Dortch, I think is how you say that. Let me see, some offensive linemen. Oh, I'm sorry, one more receiver, A.J. Brown from Ole Miss, and a couple of offensive linemen that I missed from yesterday. I had them at the bottom of my list, Connor McGovern from Penn State and Mitch Hyatt from Clemson. So that's your update on players who have met formally or informally with the Giants. Kyler Murray, who also spoke at the podium today, did not say if he had, he did say he did not meet with the Giants. This is according to Art Stapleton, who, you know, chased him down after his media session was over. Murray was supposed to have 5 interviews, I believe, this evening, Friday evening. It's unclear if one of them was the Giants, but I'm sure, you know, the Giants doing due diligence. They're trying to meet with as many players at the positions of needs as possible. So that's your quick update on, you know, the news, what went down Friday at the Combine. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to play the interview with Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan. So stay with us. Sitting next to me, I have the pleasure of having Mr. Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan. He's also at the Combine here in Indianapolis. And Emory, always good to see you. Always glad to have you on the show.
Glad to be here and glad to be sitting next to you in person rather than via the internet. So it's always a good time.
Absolutely. It's so much different when you're sitting in person. You can actually look across at the person and mm-hmm. see reactions. But Emory, let's get some thoughts. Let's jump right in and get some thoughts from you on how the Combine has kind of unfolded a little bit for the Giants. You know, yesterday we got to meet the offensive linemen. We got to meet the running backs. There were some news about measurables. And then today, as we record this, already some news coming out about Landon Collins, Olivier Vernon. So let's try and make some sense of that. Let's start first, though, with the measurements on the quarterbacks. Now, when I last had you on the show, you spoke glowingly about Dwayne Haskins and the scouting report you did on him. Now that we have answers regarding Kyler Murray and his height, has that changed how you view him, how you have him graded any? I mean, where do you see things kind of, the official measurements kind of, you know, putting things into perspective for him?
I'm just glad that it's now listed and posted and etched in stone. But those don't really change anything for me because I've always been of the mindset that size is not a skill. So that has never factored in whether or not if he was 5'6", it wouldn't matter to me, you know, because of how he plays. And that's what we have to remember. You know, guys are going to measure what they measure. They're going to run what they run. Don't let that supersede what they do on film in actual games. It's like an internship. I need to see you actually doing the job first before I make you full time. And we saw him do the job for a full season at Oklahoma at a Heisman Trophy level. I think he's fine. I think Haskins is fine. All these quarterbacks, whatever they measure, however they throw, however they run, it's going to be fine because you can't let that supersede what you just saw them do on film.
And, you know, I just find it very interesting. I tweeted this yesterday. It just seemed like the talk here at the Combine about Kyler Murray has centered around his height, and forget about the fact that, you know, he won the Heisman or the guy can play football. You know, everybody's just been obsessing over the height. Can you explain to the listeners why a quarterback's height is such a big deal, especially, you know, nowadays we see quarterbacks come in so many shapes and sizes. Why is it an advantage to have a taller guy, and what advantage can you have from a shorter guy?
I think it's all about what a guy does with his said skill set, or, you know, whether it's at 6'3 or 5'3. And I think we just have been conditioned as humans to see things one way. Like, for instance, you always see basketball players as tall until Spud Webb and Muggsy Bogues and other shorter guards went out there and played, right? You always saw centers as 7'3 until you had a 6'10 guy go out there and dominate, right? So I think people historically have always seen quarterbacks as tall. And that has always been the wrong way to view it, because we know that already eliminates a good portion of the conversation. We also saw the position, at one point in time, and this is, we're coming off the end of Black History Month, the quarterback position always looked one way until guys got opportunities to play. So it's always been the case of letting guys that are talented to play the position, play the position. So once we're slowly starting to break the mold of what a quarterback should look like and focus on what they should play like, which is always what it's supposed to be and what it should have been decades ago. So now I think that philosophy is starting to permeate around the league and around the fan base and people like that. Now, there are advantages of being short, but that's also the same advantage of being a shorter running back. Prime example. By the time you found me, it was a little bit too late. You know, but taller guys, you kind of see them, you got to see where they're going to go, and it makes you as a defender easier. You can find an easier path to navigate to get them. But a shorter guy, like a Drew Brees, like a Russell Wilson, like a Baker Mayfield, like a Michael Vick, who's about 6 feet, you really don't see those guys behind those big linemen. So you don't know when they're about to throw. So by the time you see the ball, it's a little bit too late. With a taller guy, you see the windup, you see the delivery, you see where he's going to go with it. Shorter guy, you don't see that until the ball is already out. Now you better hope you're in the right spot to make a play on it. So that's an advantage for a shorter guy. Taller guy, it's, you know, being able to navigate a little bit from a higher plane, not having to throw from, you could throw over linemen and not through windows. So you could do both as a taller guy. Shorter guy, you have to find those lanes to throw, which is cool, but, you know, that's an advantage for a taller guy. But if you have great field vision, it doesn't matter if you're 6'3 or 5'3, you're going to find the right window to throw the football in.
Now, I want to ask you specifically about Haskins, because, again, you were very, very high on him. Studying the Giants' offense and you know, Shermer's system, it looks like he kind of tailors it a little bit to the talent he has. Mm-hmm. What kind of tailoring would he have to do if he does pick up Haskins? And what do you think would really, you know, what talents of Haskins would really pop out in Shermer's system?
His attention to detail as far as the accuracy is concerned and where he's placing the football. I know people right now love to throw out these advanced stats of pretty much knocking Haskins for being accurate, and now they're focusing on where he's placing the ball. Well, I'll ask those people this: how often have you seen, you know, these Ohio State receivers have to stop in their tracks to catch a football across while they're running across the middle of the field, or running a shallow cross, or running down the field? Rarely. So that tells you he's accurate in his placement and where it needs to be, and he's hitting guys in stride. So now you project that forward, right? What does Odell Beckham do well? Run after the catch. Mm-hmm. What does Saquon Barkley do if he catches up? Run after the catch. Sterling Shepard, run after the catch. Evan Ingram, run after the catch. So you pair Haskins' accuracy and placement with those guys in that offense, outstanding. Plus, Haskins' field vision is phenomenal. There was a play specifically, I want to say it was against the Jaguars in the first game of the season. We were both there. Eli Manning dropped back to pass and went to, I want to say he went down the field to maybe Shepard or Beckham, or took a sack. It was that situation. But the point of that play was, on the far side of the field, Evan Ingram on a flag route was wide open. No one was in, you know, 45 miles of him. He was sitting there looking around just to make sure, am I seeing what I'm seeing, that nobody's around me? And he was wide open. Haskins doesn't miss that, because Haskins also isn't bothered by pressure as a 37-year-old quarterback would be. You know, he sees what's in front of him and kind of adjusts. I get that from Eli. I understand that. 37 years old, those hits add up. It's, the recovery is different in that age. Haskins doesn't miss those opportunities. He makes defenses pay. He also is very accurate, deadly accurate, also on the move. So I think all of that kind of fits in perfectly to what Sherman does offensively. That's why you saw guys like Webb get phased out, because he wasn't there yet. That's why you saw him them bring in Kyle Loletta, because Loletta was accurate, also throwing on the move. Haskins is both. He can do it on the move. He can do it in the pocket. I think he's tailor-made for that Giants offense.
All right. Sounds good. We're talking Emory Hunt here at live at the Combine, face-to-face, which is always a pleasure. We're going to take a short break, come back, and continue our talk with Emory Hunt. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan. He's a favorite of yours. He's a favorite of mine. Always a pleasure to have him. And we are talking Combine. And Emory, you know, as we record this, we met the offensive tackles, the offensive linemen yesterday. Who jumped out at you most, and who do you think might be the best fit for the Giants if they decide go offensive tackle early?
I think you have to look at the athleticism part of it, and guys that are long, athletic, that you can develop. And I talked to a lot of coaches throughout the week and asked them the same question to get a consensus of an answer. And it's about, how do you go about winning while also developing in the same process? You know, because it's tough in the NFL, because you got 46-man rosters, really 43 if you take away the long snapper, kicker, and punter, correct? And so when you look at that, I look at those developmental linemen like your Josh Miles out of Morgan State, like your Trey Pipkins of Sioux Falls, so small school linemen that are long, athletic, that could probably play inside. You look at both of the San Diego State offensive tackles. I love those guys, and Ryan Pope and Tyler Romer. Those guys, I think, are excellent. They're coming out of pro-style systems at San Diego State. They do a lot of, they got a lot of experience in run blocking, and they can still grow their game. And I think when you look at that aspect of what they do, that's the type of lineman you want. Guys that have upside, that are athletic, that you can grow within your system. And year two, year three, you're going to get a polished player, a guy that understands what you want from him. You're winning in the process. And now you're developing a lineman into a legit starter for your team for another 8 to 10 years in your offense.
And what about we haven't met them yet. We haven't met the defensive players, but that's obviously, you know, Gettleman the other day in his presser said that's going to be a top priority. You know, they don't have enough playmakers. Based on your study, who jumps out at you as being, as having Giant written all over them?
You know what? That's a great question. I would probably say don't ignore Isaiah Buggs out of Alabama, who's I have him graded as a 5-tech. He's my number one 5-tech, but he's so athletic. And he actually, at times at Alabama, was able to rush off the edge. So I see someone that can serve as a versatile pass rusher. Inside, situationally play on the end if they go to a four-man front. He has the versatility. He has the technique. He has the great ball get off. The good strength, the core strength that really jolts an offensive lineman and pushes him back into the backfield, which frees up which expands a gap for a linebacker to come through. I like him, and I think he could be in. Maybe he's a late first rounder. Maybe he's a mid first, depending on where the run on the quarterbacks and all these other positions go. But if he's there in the second round when the Giants pick, I personally will run up to the podium for them and make that pick, because I love guys that can do more than one thing, also have the it factor, the dog in them that you want, and also fits, you know, multiple needs within the front seven.
Now, I keep bringing this point up. I don't know how much of a big deal it is. I'm going to ask you, not having the third round pick, if you're the Giants, does that affect how you draft? You know, because now after you make your second round pick, you got to wait until the next day to make a pick. So I know it's best player available. But do you say to yourself, my gosh, I need this. There might be a run on it. Maybe I should take him now, especially if you have a grade that's equal to, say, another player. So how do you see that lack of a third-round pick potentially affecting how they might draft?
Well, I look at it this way, and you bring up a great point, because does that change what you would do with your first or second-round pick? Let's say if you have the luxury of having a third-round pick and you're saying, okay, maybe in the second round I can – say we have two needs. Say if we have a need for a corner and we have a need for a guard and we have a third-round pick. Well, I'm going to take the corner in the second round and wait to take the guard, because I want – my philosophy is, can you score? Can you take the ball away? So I'm going to put a premium on guys that can do both, right? Mm-hmm. Score and take the ball away. Now, if you don't have a third-round pick and you look at the same two positions of need – okay, where do we have the higher grade? And where can we go in free agency and get that value of the third round pick? So if we can go in free agency and grab a guard that's solid, that can come in and play well and can give us 3 to 4 years, we'll go that route and still take the premier player in the second round. Or if the guard is higher than a corner and we see in free agency, maybe we can get a guy that's a solid corner that can probably play nickel for us, or maybe the off corner, or they can also double as a safety corner type hybrid. We can get him in free agency and then take the guard in the second round. So it's all about where your grades are, what's out there in free agency, and that's how you go about navigating that, you know, that situation without the third round pick.
Anyway, I want to turn the attention real quick to some of the current players. Now, reports out on Friday, Landon Collins may hold out. They still haven't started talking about a contract. There was another report that just came out before we sat down to record this that Olivier Vernon is on the trade block. What's your take on those two situations?
Man, it's tough because I like both guys, mm-hmm. and I like both players. We talked about this before throughout the season about Vernon. If you could count on Vernon being there for the full season, then you pay him and you bring him back easily. But injuries are a tricky thing. You never really know, and he hasn't really been healthy. So I can understand if they move away from him. Collins sort of is in that same boat, but he plays a position where we've seen nowadays that if you can have a move piece on the back end that can also double as a nickel backer, or that can blitz, that can provide pressure, he does that. Bring him back. And so find a way to make it work for Collins, and, you know, maybe you give Vernon a situation where it's a deal based off incentives if he stays healthy, because you want to keep both players, but you also want to protect yourself, where you don't want to invest in someone that is going to give you 8 games when you're paying him for 16 games.
Right.
So I think that's the tricky situation that you have. I like both guys, and I wish they could keep them, but you also wish they could both have a clean bill of health.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that, and Collins, you know, you mentioned injuries. 2 years in a row, he wasn't able to finish the season. I always say injuries are never the player's fault.
Right.
It just happens.
It's a freak
but
thing.
It's part of the business aspect of it. You know, mm-hmm. you have to factor that in. Emery, as we go forward, we still have, again, as we record this, the quarterbacks are going to meet the media. You know, there's still a lot of workouts to come. What do you anticipating or expecting with what's left to unfold at the combine? Anything in particular?
I think the 40 times for the running backs, that's always going to be interesting to see. You want to see fast guys run fast. And it's always funny to think, because initially as we record this, I think just by watching tape that Darryl Henderson of Memphis is the fastest back. Historically, we've seen the fastest back on tape never really test the fastest at the combine. Mm-hmm. There was a few years ago, I forgot who was supposed to be the fastest back, but Jeremy Langford out of Michigan State ran the fastest. Like, how? That doesn't even make sense. So I always want to see who's going to be the fastest guy at the running backs, the receivers, and also in the defensive backs, corners and safety. Who's going to be that guy, the speed guy, and how does that speed translate on the field? Does he play that fast? That's always what I'm interested to see here at the combine. You always, as much as we talk about it, doesn't matter. You just want to see how fast guys are, who is the fastest. That's always the biggest competitive thing for any football player, any kid growing up, like, I'm faster than you, let's race. You know, so you always want to see who's the fastest of all positions.
Absolutely. Emery, pleasure as always. You can find him at Football Game Plan. It was great getting to sit down with
same
him in person.
Same here. And anytime we join forces like Voltron, we always have a good time.
We do. Listen, a lot of respect for you. And again, the listeners love you. You know, it's like I say, Emery's coming on the program, and it's like, oh, when's he coming? So anyway, folks, that's Emery Hunt of Football Game Plan. Do check him out. Your website?
FootballGamePlan.com, YouTube.com/FootballGamePlan, and FBallGamePlan on Twitter.
And he has all his videos out, his evaluations. It's out there. It's for free. It's good stuff. Well worth the look, the watch, and the read. So, Emery, thank you, and I will see you around the combine.
Appreciate you, Pat.
All right, thank you.
All right, Giant fans, that wraps up today's show. I want to thank Emery Hunt for coming on the program, and I want to remind you guys that our coverage continues. Normally, we don't do shows on the weekend, but the combine is going through the weekend, and so are we here at Locked On Giants. So tomorrow on the program, I'll have an interview I did Friday with Rick Saratella of Draft Bible and an NFL Draft Scout. I'll have a segment or two devoted to your questions, so do make sure you're sending them in to me before that. You want to email them to LockedOnGiantsPodcast@gmail.com. Or you can send them to me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina, T-R-A-I-N-A, and mark them with the hashtag AskPTrain. As always, appreciate you listening. Have a great weekend, and I will talk to you again with an update tomorrow.